Piercing the Veil on BBSRadio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right. Welcome back to Piercing the Veil, our first live show of the new year. That was a little throwback to our original intro. We'll be doing a new intro from now on for the rest of the year, and we tested it out around December-ish. Last show, I believe we did talk about a little bit about Johnny Delirious's experiences with aliens and UFOs on the dark side of the moon, all sorts of crazy esoteric stuff. This year, we will be getting back to our roots, and we're going to go back to into a little bit of breach of contract and how to conduct yourself on the side of the road and how to conduct yourself in court and universal laws and all these different types of things. And then, you know, overt civil conspiracies that have been exercised over the entire people in the nation for over 200 years. So we'll get back into that. We've done a lot of good stuff over the past year. It's hard to believe it's been 1 year now. And again, today's show, today's January 8th, 2017. I'll be doing the show solo without Corey. He's got pre-existing obligations, and we'll have him, we expect him back next week. But today I have a special guest, so welcome, listeners. Thank you very much. Our guest is Cliff Hill, and he's one of my friends and associates who's a writer. He's done a couple book publications, if you will. He's had a few issues with some government agencies and the court system, particularly the family court system, which is just a nightmare in most locations. So we're going to talk a little bit about some things of that nature. He's going to go into his books and stuff like that. What I would like to do, though, is just start the year off in the first show by just giving a little bit of advice for anybody who's willing to listen. First thing I would like to say is that every day is a day to be grateful, to start over, to die many deaths, if you will, on your character or about yourself. And therefore, to just give that power to one day is really kind of silly. Even the concept of holidays, you know, I've sort of shifted in, and a lot of associates of mine like Quinn Aker and other people have shifted into viewing holidays as pretty stupid. Now, you can see them as an opportunity. Once you've seen something for its true light, you can see something as an opportunity and use it as something valuable. So a meaningful chance to educate others when you get together with your family is a good example. But I do want to drive home the point that every single day is a day to be grateful. Every single day is a day to be focused on your perception of the events as they occur around you, or for better definition, how you're manifesting them. Okay, everything that you're doing is a manifestation of your own. Whether that be you're just manifesting your participation in somebody else's shit, or it's completely just you, it is something that you're doing for yourself. So just think about that, be aware of it, and be happy all the time. Happiness is a choice. You can be happy wherever you're at. I've been happy in the middle of a jail cell with no water, no food, so nobody can ever tell me any different. Now that I've stepped off my soapbox, that was my little diatribe, my New Year's resolution for 2017, I want to introduce our guest. His name's Cliff Hill. And welcome on board, Cliff. I appreciate you coming on to the show.
Hey, Jordan. My pleasure.
Yeah, and this is your first time here. So let's go ahead and just give the guests and the listeners a background and what you're really about, if you can. Just a short or brief bio and just a generalization of what you're about and what you do.
Yeah, sure. So just to give things a little context. So I, for the past 18 years, for the most part, outside of about 4.5 years, there were a little interesting. I provided strategic advisory services to leadership in the government, the federal government, state and municipal government, fairly successfully. So I have a good track record doing that. A lot of awards and commendations and whatnot from mayors and governors and the like. No criminal background, just make that clear. So when we start talking about the family court matter, that's crystal clear. Public trust, background clearance, so I've got security clearances and, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm kind of back at it right now. Prior to that, You know, I was in the music industry. I was a major label recording artist there for a while and a songwriter. So that's not what I'm doing now. And of course, I guess I can add writer to that to that repertoire as well.
Yeah, that's what I knew you as. I apologize. I didn't understand truly the depths of what you'd been getting into. We've only had a couple brief interactions and meetings. So it sounds like you've led a really full life. You have a lot of potential and therefore a lot of reason to be fucked with by people who like to kill potential.
No question.
Cool. And just real quick, as a side note, I'm just going to cut in real quick. I did forget. We're going to go ahead and give the call out number, and anybody who wants to call in and ask a question for Cliff or myself, or just leave a brief comment if you guys are feeling something for the new year. The show is going to be combined with our guest appearance for that purpose. So the number to call is 888-429-5471, and just choose Station 2, and our awesome producers will get you squared away. And we'll jump right back to Cliff here. I'm sorry about interrupting there. Do you have anything else that you'd like to let our listeners know about before we get into the show?
No, just that. Just want to, you know, add some logistical credibility to my background and let everybody know that, I'm not, you know, I'm not coming from nowhere here. Got lots of friends, you know, lots of relatives, lots of accolades. So it's not like I'm just, you know, some guy who, you know, smoked a few too many pipe hits and calling you to talk about, you know, my esoteric experiences here. So
on this show, and you know, with some of our listeners and stuff like that, those people would be expected to call in, and we would actually give them more credence than somebody else because of personal experience and how it opens your filters. But I like you're very careful about how you're positioning what's about to come up at the end of the show, because it is important to have a reference for character for somebody who's never dealt with family court before. It's very easy to judge somebody and think that something was their fault, when in fact you can do everything right in that hellish nightmare dimension and still be fucked in the ass. Excuse my language, or don't.
Yeah,
that's truly what happens. So.
Yeah.
Let's just jump into what I know, Cliff. I know about you, and that is that you're an author. So if you could just maybe talk about, I mean, just give a brief background on how you shifted into writing a little bit, and then some of your main accomplishments in writing your books. If you want to plug those, feel free to do that. I love getting information for other people out there. So just go ahead and do that if you can.
Right, because, you know, I started to look at, you know, our quantum reality and, you know, the illusory existence and what, you know, as we exist or don't exist. But I wanted to keep it fairly, you know, material at this point. And because here we are, and however illusory it might be, we still have to live in it. And, you know, there do appear to be some rules and boundaries at this point. So as far as the writing goes, so I briefly left government contracting, decided I was going to pursue something I was more interested in, the writing, for one thing, and kind of got back to the music a little bit, but let that suffer as well for other things. So I thought the book was going to be about, you know, quantum cosmology and our reality and whatnot, but it ended up being just more diatribe about a longing for more and how I, you know, ended up homeless on the streets of Philadelphia. Where I never intended to be. So, you know, it sort of shifted from, I thought I was just going to write a book and have a good time to this journey's turned into quite a nightmare. You know, and I think I was a little naive about where I was going with it to begin with, but it took me about 5.5 years to write the book. Some of it I wrote from the streets, some of it I wrote from my apartment.
I was going to ask you about your media over that long time period. It was just a collaboration of different types, like writing on paper and audio recording and things like that.
I always had a laptop till it burned up in Philly. And when the laptop burned up, I started using computers at coffee houses and libraries to continue writing. I don't think the CIA expected that, quite frankly. And I just changed the nature of the book to, you know, to being on the streets. I still think I was a little naive as how I got there. I'm not quite as naive as I was about that now. I think I left a few things out that I put back into a second edition that are more descriptive of causes and folks that I had left information out because, you know, I thought I was protecting people. But, you know, after the tire tracks on my back got uncomfortable from the bus having run me over so many times, I realized that I should probably put some of that information back in the book.
Right, just sort of like a dead man switch, if you will.
So once I got off the streets. So the book was published by a small publishing company that hasn't paid me, with a CIA asset on the board at this point. Mm. So interesting. So I'm republishing the book at some point soon. But anyway, okay. About the book. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you're good. No, I was just concluding.
Yep. I think about the book. Yeah, so, I mean, it's about a lot of things, really. I mean, it's about the state of our nation is what it really kind of ended up being, you know, and sort of an expose on how we got here and what are, you know, and some things that, you know, historically I would have even done more research had I had the time before publishing. But at some point, I guess you got to say, hey, you know, let's put this out and then continue to work. So it's really two books. I anticipate having the other one released soon.
Hmm. Okay. All right. And that other one is, how many years have you been working on that concurrently with the other one?
Yeah. So I kind of wrote them simultaneously. I wrote the book, split it, and then reformatted the book, rewrote, and ended up with, you know, over 1,000 pages. And so, so it ended up being two books. The second book I'm not finished with because what it ends up doing is it goes from what is the present to the past to the present to the past, back and forth in each book. So it jumps around quite a bit. The first book was released in 2014. Or 2015,
okay.
Actually.
And, yep. And you mentioned that the book jumps around a little bit and back and forth in time, just to state all the different particulars of the frauds and conspiracies and everything that's happening to arrive in the state of our nation that you're talking about. How far back are you going, just so that we know?
For me, well, I mean, in my research, way back. In regard to it's a memoir, and in regard to that, you know, the publisher calls it creative nonfiction, but it's really a memoir. I jumped back between 2010 when everything was happy, joyful, and, you know, as far as I know, fairly free, to the present, up through, well, you know, I continue to work on the second book. The first book kind of ends, I think, in 2012. So it goes between 2010 and 2012. Bouncing back and forth between different experiences. It's reflective, right?
Yeah, I was going to say it's interesting because that time period, we have shifted within that time period so much towards a negative and totalitarian. You know, the foundation's always been there. In fact, my research extends all the way back, and a lot of really good, smart people, smarter than me, extends all the way back, you know, to the very creation, right before the creation of the nation, the Articles of Confederation, all sorts of different things. And there's just been so many frauds perpetrated by secret groups and people in positions of power that have held controlling interest in global economies and ruling monarchies for thousands of years. It's just the state of what they are, the black nobility families and what people commonly call the Illuminati. We get into that a lot, and there's a lot of misconceptions. Yeah. But all of that foundation and root has produced decaying fruit from the branches, and you know, it's constantly being produced, and every year it gets stinkier and rotting, you know, and it just gets worse and worse, and your freedoms are eroded. So over the course of 2010 to present, what have you really noticed that has really changed to affect the general population?
Well, for one thing, everybody in America is an elitist, you know, and I think it's an interesting programming. I mean, let's look at it this way. You know, if I'm on Southwest and I pay $35 to get an upgrade where I have more legroom, suddenly those people behind me, you know, in second class, you know, that don't really deserve to live if anything happens to the plane, you know. So because, you know, I paid $35 more, now suddenly I'm superior to them.
There's a lot of that, and the social conditioning is one thing that I was going to say our listeners are probably very keenly aware of without us mentioning it. But now that you have mentioned it, the social conditioning is really responsible for what you're talking about, the extreme class warfare, worse than it was before. And also, you know, this elitism or elitist mindset. While it's cool not to look at yourself, it's cool not to improve, it's cool not to ever admit that you're wrong, but it's not cool to, you know, just treat everybody with some sort of equanimity instead of equality. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Because equality is not, it's not what you think it is. So equality is like three boxes, 1, 2, and 3, near a fence, right? And all three of those boxes are the same height, except there might be somebody who's 6 foot tall, somebody who's 3 foot three, and when they stand on the boxes, one guy can see way over the fence, one guy can't see, even though the boxes, the foundation, is equal. Does it make sense? The equanimity would be discovering each individual character, a flaw or trait, and either bolstering it or modifying it or changing it. That is not done by people or organizations in our society. It's all look at on the outside, look at everybody else, look how much better I am. I'm projecting my, you know, what is it, inferior complex onto you guys, and it's manifesting in the form of elitism and really stinky social justice tainted liberal elitism. It's a very weird combo. So, I mean, that's what I've seen.
Yeah.
So I'll let you get back in.
You know, I mean, I think I started writing the book, and I was just asking questions, and you know, probably still am, and you know, I was certainly looking at everything that was wrong with me. I mean, you know, I think it was very reflective in respect to that, and then I said, wait a minute, you know, fuck that bullshit, you know, because suddenly there's everything wrong with me, you know, and no, I, you know, that's my perspective. I don't know, you know, it was probably quite naive, but at the same time, I think that, you know, it was a good idea and probably still is to continue asking those questions and you know, to the best of my ability, not make specific judgments. I mean, it's hard to do. It's like, you know, being in a Werner Herzog film, you know, he's going to involve himself regardless.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I mean, a very unique perspective for a director to have, for those of you that don't know who that is. But I'll say this, Cliff, I just want to wrap it up in a general scope so our listeners have a context.
Sure.
So for a certain period of time from 2010 to, you know, present, you started working on two projects. One of them's unfinished. One of them was finished through many, many different obstacles and hurdles and things that were thrown in your path, which
Definitely.
You referred to as tire tracks on your back. And I think our listeners can infer who was doing that. There's a lot of different agencies that are dedicated to harassing certain people.
I can tell you exactly who was doing it, sure.
Yes.
For the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
so let's, that's, like I'm going to go ahead and segue into that. That's what I was doing there is we'll just jump into.
Go ahead.
Basically, there were some things that you were writing that were going to push some triggers or buttons in the right places of a lot of people in the population that would allow them to come to their own conclusion, because those are always the most powerful ones. And somebody didn't like that, and they're always monitoring for that type of stuff, and they have control over every single mainstream media person. They're all paid 30, 40 fucking million dollars plus. Megyn Kelly just switched over to Fox and got a $40 million contract, $30 million, something like that. It's fucking ridiculous. But we know who's doing it. They did it to you. So why don't you talk a little bit about what you're willing to speak about, some of the experiences that you've had with certain various government agencies, not just the CIA.
Yeah, not just the CIA, right. So because I can definitely pinpoint, you know, the CIA and Latrell Osborne and those folks.
I like to group all the terroristic shit into the CIA group and all the sneaky covert intelligence gathering, data hacking to the NSA.
And let's not forget about the military. Let's not forget about the military and their budgets and whatnot. So, you know, and I know how it works. I've been in government contracting for over 18 years at the leadership level.
All right. Take it away, Ernie.
Yeah. I know how they're doing it. So it's not, you know, it's not really rocket science. Let's talk about that a little. Okay, so when I started writing the book, so when my wife and I separated and I went to Maryland, I guess, Virginia to Maryland. So I was staying in a friend of mine's house, Bobby Gavazzi, who is the leading scientist at NASA and NOAA in terms of Earth Weather Satellite imaging system calibration and assuring the accuracy of weather satellite data. So he really knows his stuff. And so I was staying with him and working on the book and was contacted by Latrell Osborne, who's a supposedly former high-level CO and manager of clandestine operations for the U.S. Internal Intelligence Agency for 30 years during the Cold War and managed assets in 30, 40 different countries. I was contacted by him. He'll say I contacted him, but that's not the way it went. And the NSA contacted Bob at roughly the same time. At the same time, I was spending time with high-level Chinese dignitaries, high-level leadership in Chinese government, basically the leaders in a sixth-largest GDP city, Wuxi, China, in China. I was spending time with all the folks that are leadership in their government, most of them anyway. Including the mayor, director of municipal development, director of technology, spent several months with them, actually. At the same time, the NSA contacted Bob to ask some questions about water, actually, I believe is what they were calling about. Shortly thereafter, and I'd been working on the book, primarily, I was trying to get it published at that point, and was shortly thereafter contacted by the original publisher. From that point forward, I just couldn't seem to get employment. Everything kind of fell apart. Nobody wanted to hire me for whatever reason. There was no government contracting work at all. I endured that for about a year, year and a half.
Wow.
At the same time, the situation intensified as far as, you know, as far as the courts and my son. Not to get into the logistics of it, but just to say that, you know, and
it crossed over into personal and really.
It did. I was also approached by what I believe is an Illuminati agent at that point, and another clandestine agent. One of them doing a clandestine evaluation, pretending she was somebody she wasn't, clearly. And then I was directly approached, and this is in 2013, by somebody else working, I believe, for the military. I'm not sure.
I could just jump in before you get to that. The evaluation that you mentioned, I've heard of those types of things. And when the internet and database profiling tools and the artificial intelligence is, for whatever reason, in certain rare exceptions, when they're not able to build a complete profile, my understanding is they actually will send an agent out into the field to complete an assessment, somebody who's trained very highly in body language assessment and all sorts of different types of things. So they're looking for weak points, susceptibility points. They're trying to fish for information for anything they can use against you or press pressure points like your family or things like that, right?
Yeah, and at the same time, I was having conversations with Latrell, so it wasn't like I wasn't talking to somebody.
You know, obviously.
His pitch was he wanted me to come work for them. And I said, I'm not even remotely interested in working for you. I'm not remotely interested in working for any. He's you know, a supposedly former CIA, right?
In what capacity, though?
Do you know? High-level. Latrell Osborne Sr. was a high-level CO. Case officer and manager for clandestine operations for USCIA for 30 years, managing assets in 30, 40 countries. So I declined.
Good.
I was approached by and threatened, by another agent. I'm not sure who he was working for. I think I was threatened in respect of what I was talking about in terms of weather modification. And, I tried to write my book so everybody could understand it. I think that's important. I hadn't written the second one yet. I had just started working on some of those things. And I certainly had the backing of two high-level NASA scientists to say that, you know, that this is going on and here's how it's happening.
that was my curiosity, whether or not you had some sort of testimony or factual data that scared the shit out of them.
Sure, they don't like it because A, they, you know, I'm credible. I've got
and B, it's hard to rebut.
It is. It is because, you know, the information's credible, but it's also understandable. And I think that's what really irks them is because, you know, it's easy enough that anybody can understand it. And, you know, I think that was important. A friend of mine, Rafael Alvarez, who was the lead writer for The Wire on HBO and lived at his house for many years, was executive producer at NBC for many years, said, you know what, I just have one word of advice for you, Cliff. Make sure everybody can understand what you're writing. And I think that was pretty good advice to get me in trouble.
Oh, but this guy's got mass appeal to all the ignorance that we've socially engineered? Okay, let's get him.
Sure. So I don't think they expected me to get off the streets, quite frankly, nor write the book while it was there. I think that kind of surprised them. So, you know, I think that's part of it. And then suddenly he wants me to work for him. And I'm like, what are you kidding me? You kept me from my son for how many years? So now we can talk about, you know, that aspect of things, because that's quite interesting, too. You know,
yeah. So
how they leverage, you know, your family to get what they want. Go ahead.
It sounds like it was sort of clandestine with veiled threats and veiled offers up to a point, and then when you flat out refused and they knew that they had to segue into something else or take another tack, that's when you started having some major issues with the court system. So yeah, let's go ahead and jump into that.
Yeah.
Or what do you have to say?
No, I was gonna say before that, actually, I started having issues with the court system right when I left, you know, Bob's place. That's when they started. You know, and the Illuminati evaluator, CIA evaluator had done her job. So that's when things got, you know, pretty dicey with the courts. And, you know, and she works for a federal agency. I'll tell you right now, that's how they do it. See, they have these overt jobs where they work for federal agencies as contractors, right? And then they're getting paid for that, but they're doing clandestine activities, and that's not on the record. So I'll just
that's right, and it's
right
it's just like a cover job to them, the lower levels of what they're doing. In the background,
that's
they're
correct.
Getting paid.
Yep.
To be an agent, an asset.
That's right.
And they have certain mission protocols. And her mission protocol obviously was to act in that capacity in a certain specific targeted zone, which would be what, the family child court and services or something like that.
Yeah, she was
appointed administrator by the judge.
Yeah, so here's what happened with the court. You know, once, you know, they realized they could leverage my son, they did. And it started, I guess about 2010, 2011, you know, I'm not going to definitively say that the CIA is leveraging the courts, you know, using my son. What I'm going to tell you is that I was denied any type of custody. I went to court or visitation for several hearings. I went to court 7, 8, 9, 10, 13, 15, 16 times. Lawyers and no lawyer, both. And no lawyer. You know, I wrote my own motions and, you know, went through the whole nine yards. And no, absolutely no visitation. None, zero, nothing. With my background and everything, nothing. You know, and that trend continued. I mean, it continued through the current case. You know, I've now been to court 30 times. So I finally got on a class action suit against the state of New Jersey with 10 other fathers, because it's atrocious anyway. They have this whole best interest of the child thing, right? And so I got on a class action suit. Now the Third Circuit's delaying any ruling on the matter because they know they screwed up. I mean, it's pretty clear that, you know, there was no reason not to give me a plenary hearing. There's no reason to deny custody in any form or fashion. I have no background that would preclude custody.
I'm actually understanding all this, and some of our listeners might not, but I want to jump in and ask you. So you were in the second district, which I've also been in, and I've been before all the federal district judges there. They're all crap. They're all Illuminati assholes, and they stall out. They don't do shit for years. They didn't do anything on a summary judgment where the other party didn't answer. They didn't do anything for a fucking year, and then they dismissed it. So I totally know what's going on with you with your class action when it was in there. But you said it moved to the third district. Would that be the Maryland issues, or what happened with that?
No, this is in New Jersey. So it's at the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, but they're delaying a ruling. There's two suits
Circuit
now. One
court.
Back
okay.
at the,
I thought you were on the federal level.
Well, we are at the federal level, at the Third Circuit, at the Federal Court of Appeals. So that's where
that's
where it is now.
Pennsylvania, then. The Third Circuit's over in Pennsylvania.
Jersey. It's a case in Jersey. It's in Newark, actually. The court's in Newark.
Yeah. You're at the Newark. Okay, I was at the Trenton office, the Trenton building.
Right.
So you were at a different one. Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Sorry, I got my circuits mixed up. But basically,
No.
so when somebody goes into, I want to explain for our listeners real quick, Cliff.
Sure.
When somebody goes into court with a lawyer and they don't get what they want, but they get something, you can kind of say, yeah, the lawyer took advantage. He didn't really do all he was going to do, and blah, 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 blah. Or they might get something like a really good result. They have a badass lawyer, but it usually comes with a big price that they've paid up front. But when somebody has a lawyer so many times and then doesn't have a lawyer so many times and they get the same result, like yourself, that is 100% complete insider fraud that's happening. I can guarantee
Oh,
you
no
that that
question.
judge was being paid off. And most of these guys are either bank assets, so the judges are on the payroll of the big banks, so that when mortgages and all that stuff come through, it's like a 99.5 conviction rate. And they're also
Yeah.
on agency asset payrolls, like you're talking about. So 100% certainty that you got bent over, and you know it, right? And it just is what it is. So if let's get back into it. I'm sorry to get you off on the tangent about
Now
my whole
let's go
circle.
to my career, because
Sure.
I'm a very successful high level strategic advisor to leadership and leadership development for federal government leaders, which is interesting, right? State, federal, and municipal. So you have to ask yourself the question, how am I working now? Because 4.5 years I didn't work, just about three and a half. I'm sorry, almost four. You know, I had to scramble a great deal to get work. You know, spent, like I said, 6 months homeless on the streets of Philly fighting for my rights. Then started to scream really loud. You know, I mean, my brother happens to be the VP of programming for, you know, a major media conglomerate. So I just started screaming at the top of my lungs and saying, you know, here's what's going on. You know, I filed a report with MUFON. They never responded, but the point is, it got my feet moving, and I put all the things down that occurred, that I know occurred. My computer was hacked. There were pointed changes made to my documents that were, you know, covert threats. You know, I'm sure that was NSA oriented. None of it legal, you know, none of it. So, you know, little things in my URL, little messages like the child situation will improve soon, right? In my URL, okay? So, yeah.
That's complete 100% control over your shit.
Yeah. So what I'm saying to you is, you know, and you're talking to a guy who's still providing advisory services to leadership and government, right? Now that's interesting, right?
Well, I mean, there's only so much they can do to you short of killing you. And if you made a good enough name for yourself or made a big, you
That's
know,
right.
thing like that, or even on an esoteric level, I know you may not, or a lot of people not might not believe this, but it is 100% absolutely possible to repel these types of things energetically and
Yeah,
spiritually.
sure.
And in fact, I've met agents, people that I've known to be agents that were covertly observing me at Starbucks, a weird guy with a khaki pants and,
Yes.
or excuse me, shorts and a weird fucking floral Hawaii t-shirt with a military
Yeah.
style Vietnam little
Yeah.
hat. You know what I'm talking about? Almost looks like a
Yeah,
sailor
I
cap
do.
or whatever.
Yeah, I know the type.
Yeah,
Yep.
the dude's like, so hey, what are you working on there, you know, Jordan? It's like, wait a second, I've never fucking met you and you know my
Yeah.
name and you're
Yeah,
sitting
yeah,
right
yeah.
next to me.
That's
What the
it.
fuck?
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
I've looked right on over and I go, I know who you are, know what you're doing, and I just want to let you know I'm okay with you observing as long as you understand that if you take any sort of action that leads to or it directly hurts me, harms me, or anybody that I have in my life, then you're going to be obligated to my soul when I leave this body. And when you
Yeah.
die, you're going to be obligated to my soul for hundreds of thousands of years, and you'll be my
Yeah.
fucking servant.
Yeah,
And you
exactly.
committing that act will be your fucking
Yeah.
agreement, your binding agreement, as if you signed your name to
Right.
a contract. You get what
That's
I'm
it.
talking about. Dude's never heard anything like that in his life. Now,
Yeah.
later on in my experiences, I think these guys have learned to expect that type of shit from me. No, I'm not cocky. No, I'm not trying to say, oh, I'm all badass, blah, blah, blah. But I'll fucking
Right.
handle myself if I need to, because what else can you do, Cliff? What else can you do? Somebody who has some sort of authority or secret power to kill you
Well, you
with
can't. I
cancer
mean,
or whatever. You know what I mean?
yeah. Yeah, the arrogance of it's what gets me, you know.
That's right.
Just the overt arrogance of it, you know, and I understand how that occurs and, you know, why they're getting away with it. That I get.
It's because of fear.
It bothers me though, you know, I mean, for sure. Yeah, I guess you know, and when I think about that, I think about the media, you know, of course. And I really like I really like lately this guy's blog, the American, I'm trying to think of the name of it. He's a criminologist, Cornell, law degree from Cornell, and then he's at Fresno State. He's a professor at Fresno State. He's got a blog. I think I mentioned it to you. And Jason Kissner, American Thinker's the blog.
There you go.
And he talks about Sandy Hook. He's got an article about Sandy Hook, which I find quite interesting. What I like about Jason is he's all about the facts, you know, and I like that. I mean, perhaps he's esoteric, but he's just looking at it as an investigation. I mean, he's not as passionately wrapped up in it.
Wait, hang on, Cliff. Is this the guy that was harassed and publicly shamed and blacklisted for his investigation? That was a retired police investigator, right?
No. So Wolfgang Halbitz, the guy that – so there's this guy, Leon, one of the fathers. And listen, hey, if this guy's kid, which I doubt seriously, but it is a possibility, his kid was actually killed at Sandy Hook. You know, I feel really bad for the guy because I know what it's like to lose a son. Mine happens to still be alive, but I still lost him, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I've experienced the same thing. So.
You know, but here's the thing. What Kissner does is he investigates these things. He runs algorithms. He does he looks at it from an inquisitive perspective and calculates the odds in this case based on all historical mass murders in the United States over the past, you know, over the history of the country, and then runs an algorithm to determine what the probability is that there wasn't a single injured kid, not one single injured survivor. I think two adults, one who somehow happened to be walking without crutches 2 months later.
Well, for as much bullshit as the FBI is, their report for the year, their statistical report, concurs with what you've just said of that guy's research. And it basically says that no children died in the Sandy Hook region of the of that state in that year. It has a statistics for all the deaths of every single age range in every part of that state for the entire year. And during the Sandy Hook shootings, not one of them is listed.
Well, it's a 1 in 2,000 probability that there would be no injured alive, you know, or two or three or four, you know, people in that scenario, you know, especially if the guy was psychotic. So, you know, I just look at that and things like, you know, that the dates on five different, you know, morning blogs and asking for contribution blogs happen to be 3 days the posting dates, right?
Yeah, so the donation websites, the tragedy for the losses of the children at Sandy Hook, the Google cache listed it as 3 days before, and it was posted on Facebook 3 days before, and people caught that shit and spread it like wildfire. I actually have it saved on my computer.
You can't change a cache. It's nope. BS. If anybody tells you you can, I know different. I've been in IT for years and years and years. You can't change
it. Cliff, you can't. And Cliff, they've been doing that for Aurora and all the other, like the Batman shootings and all these other things. They've actually been caught doing the same thing. It's the same fucking MO every time. So,
yeah. Here's the problem.
Okay, go ahead.
The problem is that these things are only getting YouTube hits of about, you know, 330, you know, 5,000 hits, 6,000, 7,000, some at the most 30 or 40, but that's somebody that's already got some notoriety. There's no consolidated enterprise to disseminate the information. So, you know, nothing's going to really be heard. And even if it is, people just don't care. I mean, if it doesn't affect their lives in some way, they don't care.
It doesn't stick. It just passes right through.
Most people just want entertainment. Now, you go to a YouTube video of Insane Clown Posse, you know, debating with Sharon Osbourne, and you've got, you know, 500,000 hits.
That's the social conditioning there. 80% of adults have not been inside a bookstore. You know, there's Amazon, but it accounts for those types of things. There's been no books read by like 3 or 4 out of 5 adults in America, I believe, during that year. So if you're part of those 2 out of 5, fucking awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah.
It's a pretty sad state.
It is. You know, what my book's about, of course, is a lot of things, healthcare, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I mean, it's about esoteric things for sure, but esoteric things that you can fucking prove, right? Esoteric world, right? So, I mean, you know, I'm trying to look at it as analytically as I can based on, you know, the matrix that we're in. So, in respect to that, you know, I just what I'm finding is that people just want to be entertained. I mean, you can create a more empathetic perspective, but, you know, you better do it in an entertaining way, you know, otherwise you're screwed.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just broadcast all over business and marketing and e-commerce. It's all the same. If you don't have calls to action, if you don't have hooks or, you know, icebreakers or catchy or witty little things, then people just really aren't going to pay attention. They're not going to be invested. They won't invest their time. And that's something that's, dude, it's so by design. The GMOs, the vaccines, all this bullshit, chemtrails, yep. All this shit is leading, and then the social engineering on top of it. It's just leading to a total state of zombie robot controlled slaves. We know this. Everybody's been yelling this for fucking 20 years plus. We get it. Starting with the John Birch Society way back in the fucking 70s. You know what I mean?
Right.
We get it, but I'm going to keep fucking yelling it until somebody wakes the shit, you know, wakes up and the shit changes. It sounds like we're doing the same.
Well, you know, but it is empathetic if you're experiencing it. I'm not saying the other side doesn't have a point, you know, but I don't know. I've been hanging out with them too much lately, if you know what I mean. So, you know, I can't really tell you what that point might be. And how can I empathize with the perspective I haven't had a chance to experience, you know? I mean, I think a lot of really rich folks go out dressed as poor folks. I mean, I think they do. I've seen
the smart ones.
That's exactly right. Because they want to see what's going on. For sure. Yeah, for sure. That's not what my book's about, though. You know, I mean, it's just about my experience, right? So here's the state of America, and let me tell you why. Here it is. So I'm looking through Craigslist, right? Looking for an apartment or a room or whatever. So I get curious, of course. This is the problem. I get curious. It kills me every time. And it's what got me in trouble. See, this book got me in big trouble. And of course, it was just that curiosity. And I'm seeing these ads, you know, from these ladies that are like over 40. And it's like, I mean, Craigslist room for rent is like the Lonely Hearts Club. You know, it's like they have let me finish. So they've got these. There are these women over 40 that are clearly single that have these rooms for rent, these really nice, pretty beds with, you know, pastels and, you know, teddy bears on them and whatnot. You know, I guess just hoping, you know, but it's kind of, to me, it's like here's how jaded I am. What goes off in my head is like I start seeing like Kathy Bates in Misery, right? I mean, that's where my head goes. I'm like, you know. So, you know, or Arsenic and Old Lace. You ever see that movie with Cary Grant and Arsenic and Old Lace where the two old ladies are like taking in, wayward men and murdering them with arsenic?
Well, no, I haven't, but I'm going to watch it for two reasons. Number one, I've been poisoned with arsenic over the past couple months. I don't know if our listeners know that. I almost died by February. If I hadn't caught it, I would be dead. You wouldn't be listening to the show. So chalk that up to the 400th time I've almost died in my life and had to accept my impending death. But that's one reason I'm going to watch it. Number two is because Cary Grant is a shit and anything that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah. So I'll watch that. That's neither here nor there. But so I would say this. It is sort of a reflection of today's society. Is this stab you in the back slowly type thing while pretending everything's okay and nice and dainty. So, well, let's get back and do a recap real quick.
Sure.
So you talked about your book. It's about a lot of cool stuff that people would want to hear about, but the government doesn't want you to get out there. They harassed
That's
you
true.
For a long time, and it went to your family court issues where you went to court 30 times now. You're still on there trying to fight for it. Good job for you. You're going to have a rough battle.
I've not seen my son
in
almost 6 years. I'm almost 6 Ugh. Years. Yep.
Oh my God! You should talk to my buddy Claude, my client, and my friend Claude Albert. I'll put you in touch with him. He's going on 7 years with his custody battle over there in New Jersey, and that was the case I was talking to you about.
It's crazy.
So, all right. So then we got into Sandy Hook research, right? We did that as well.
Yep.
And now, what else do you have to share with our listeners?
Yeah. So here's what gets me. People don't really get this. They really don't get how this best interest of the child thing is going to affect them in the future. They don't understand. And this is why they don't care, right? Because if they really understood what was going on, then they might care. They might care. I don't mean the clandestine weather modification, chemtrail, conspiracy that happens to be occurring. What I'm talking about is what the bigger intention is, because down the road,
if it hits the family, they're going to pay attention, Cliff. That's for sure.
Here's what's going to happen, because I look at it just like I look at, the Christian Church, and I talk about them a little bit in my book because they're the only ones still fighting for this. But you know what? When those judges start ordering, unconstitutionally ordering, flu vaccines and microchips put into us to track us for our own good at a youthful age because of, virus, because of war, whatever staged event that they create to make that
interest
occur,
of the child, catch all phrase.
That's correct. It is in the best interest of the child. You see what I mean? So then
I want to stop you real quick
and tell the
listeners why that is, because the doctrine of parens patria means that the state is the parent. And when somebody comes together in a legal union before the state, which is what you do when you enter into a marriage, and the products or the fruits of that union are owned by the third party to the contract, which is the state of whatever state that you've entered into the agreement. Ask any fucking lawyer. They'll tell you this if they're not completely controlled and smart. If you've got a family lawyer, somebody like that, go talk to them and ask them to look into it. They will find the same conclusion. Now, the parens patria basically has a catch-all statement in there, which is that the state will operate for the best interest of the child, even to the detriment of the natural-born parents, which happens consistently. And
that,
so that's what you're talking about, Cliff. And that's what they're using that for, is to start ordering and doing all the stuff.
Absolutely. Yep. So down the road, when there's this bullshit Ebola outbreak or whatever they're claiming there is,
Zika,
right? Whatever the mass media is claiming there is, and everybody gets in this fear-based mode, right? And, they're going to say, what do you mean you're not going to have your kid vaccinated or have a microchip put in their skin? That is not, and the courts can say this, keep that in mind, that is not in the best interest of the child. So we're going to order you to do that.
At pain of imprisonment and fines and loss of the child forever and termination
of
parental rights. And then they'll just do whatever the fuck they want to anyways.
They already are. But why it exists. These little things end up meaning a lot, and they'll ultimately apply to everyone. So those people who don't care today, might care later.
Well, Cliff, we're running out of time here.
Sure.
I do want to have you back on the show for another show if we can at some point, if you're willing to do so.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, we'll schedule that and have you back on in a few weeks or a month or something like that. Just want to give you a little time to have some more happenings in your life. And sounds like you've got a lot of busy travel coming up as well with your advisement and your consultations. So good luck with that. I'm going to go ahead and take the rest of the time to do a little outro here. So we'll go ahead and let you off the show here. Before I do, actually, is there anything that you want to plug in 30 seconds or less? Any links or any way that somebody can get a hold of you if they need to?
Yeah. So, if anybody wants the original version of the book, they can get it online through The Broken Looking Glass, An American Adventure by Cliff Hill. It's everywhere. Dining Publications is the publisher. Or you can send me an email. Feel free to email me if you want a free copy of the new edition. I could certainly use some readers to tell me what they think. And that's cliffhill@gmail.com.
With one F?
Correct.
I ran into that earlier. Cool. Well, thank you, Cliff. I appreciate it, man. You did an excellent job. You're really good at helping me segue and going back and forth. It's not too difficult, but it's a little bit more difficult without a co-host bouncing off of them and stuff like that. So appreciate your time. We'll have you back soon, and I hope you have a really safe and great day.
All right, Jordan. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate you having me, brother.
Absolutely.
All right. Take care.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Okay, listeners, next week's topic is going to be, it's basically a kickback to our roots. It's just going to be a dialogue show between me and Corey. We're going to talk a lot about contracts, going back into universal contract, how to deal with yourself on the side of the road or with perceived authorities, and no naivety. We know what happens when a gun gets pointed at your face and you're ordered around to do stuff, but there's ways to deal with it. So we'll talk about that most people won't tell you about. The lawyers won't talk to you about it. And the Patriot guys won't tell you because they don't fucking know and they're doing it wrong. So that's what we're here for. We're also going to have a little bit of a musical performance or two. We might combine a half of a show with a dialogue and a musical performance. And I have a really exciting guest, one of my close friends and buddies, who's performed for Cirque du Soleil, and he's being courted by Disney right now and stuff like that for huge contracts. He's a performing artist and a drummer from Senegal that specializes in African dance and tribal drums and stuff like that. And speaking of, we've got about a minute left, so what I'll do is leave you listeners with a little bit of my didgeridoo music. It's nothing much, but I do want to give that to you as an outro for the new year. And when we get back next week, we will have some exciting stuff for you. So without further ado, here we go, and we'll close out the show with this little didgeridoo track. So we'll leave it there. I appreciate you listening. We'll see you next week. I hope everybody has a wonderful, safe week. And next week, Sunday, 5 p.m. Central Time, join us. You can call 888-429-5471, Station 2, and you can call in and interact with that number. You just want to give us a listen. Again, the number is 605-475-1600. And until then, pierce the veil and the truth will reveal itself.